Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Rick Bizio's Franchise Focus podcast. I have our friend Rick Bizio with us today, and we're going to dive into the second part of a two-part discussion on the political climate and its impact on franchising. Our first show that you can find on our Blog Talk Radio page talked about sort of the end of the election or the stretch run of the most recent election between Hillary Clinton and now President-elect Donald Trump. And today we'll dig into the aftermath, sort of what happened, reasons why, and what we expect to see from a Trump presidency and how that will affect the franchise business model and small businesses and small business owners around the country. But first, a couple of housekeeping items. Of course, you can always reach out to us on Twitter at EducatedZ. That's Educated Z-E-E. You can find Rick on LinkedIn, doing a fantastic job of presenting some excellent published posts consistently every month. Some good stuff there for you to check out, as well as on Entrepreneur. He presents and shares some fantastic articles there, some of which did talk about the election. We'll dig into those in a second. But if you're interested, his most recent post that just went up this week that's generating a lot of buzz on Twitter is what to do when your spouse doesn't want you to own a business, something that's particularly interesting to me as I just got married. So without further ado, Rick, thanks for obviously – oh, thank you, sir, and welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us and hopping on the line with me to sort of talk about the aftermath of the election.
Absolutely, absolutely, and congratulations on getting married. That's a wonderful step, and I know you'll love it. I know it'll be great for you.
Thank you, sir. Well, I'm going to throw a curveball at you on that topic. So, you know, speaking to that, what's that?
You gonna ask me about my marriage?
Well, no, I'm gonna ask you. I'm gonna say, you know, I am just, you know, now recently married. I've heard sort of the feedback from a lot of folks, you know, sort of not necessarily on the business frontier, but do you have any advice for me as I enter married life?
Yeah, she's the boss. You just remember that. Everything else will work out fine.
Get comfortable with yes, and you're right.
Exactly. No, in all seriousness, you know, and I don't know, everybody's got different marriages and that sort of thing. And I know you've lived together for a while, but what works well for my wife and I really is that we have different roles and we respect each other in those roles. You know, there's certain things that I am responsible for. I do. It's my area. She, you know, respects the fact that I will take care of those things and doesn't question my ability to do that. But I do the same with her. She's got certain areas of our family and of our life that she's in charge of. And, you know, I don't need to know what she does every day because I know she's doing it and I know she's doing it right. And I trust her for that. So I think that's important to have that trust and not be stepping on each other's toes all the time. I'm not sure if that helps, but that's maybe a little something.
Certainly does. I think we're pretty good at that. We're getting better. And obviously we're very early in our married life, but funny that you say that because we're sort of talking about those things on our wedding trip, and it's been determined that I'm the navigator and she's the healer, so I'll take it.
There you go. That's a good start.
But sort of on that point, I mean, I guess the only way you can get to that point, it's a nice parallel to that most recent Entrepreneur article you wrote, and I think it's an important and relevant aside as we head into the holiday season, and a lot of folks are, you know, thinking about new careers or new job opportunities and exploring the idea of franchising and business ownership. This is a slower time of the year typically for executives, for you know, everybody who has a job as they ramp up for 17 and they have those discussions around you know, the holiday dinner table over you know, Christmas dinner and speaking to their family and most importantly their spouse. You know, when you're speaking to defining roles or defining next steps for a relationship, that requires quite a bit of communication. So if you don't mind, share a little bit about, you know, if you are someone out there listening to our show who is interested in maybe starting a business next year and your spouse, you know, may be a little bit hesitant about it, if there's one thing you could share with those folks, you know, about the importance of communication, how they should have sort of approach that topic over the holidays, what would you share with those folks?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't start with the conversation of, hey, I want to open up a business. I would start with the conversation, where do we want to be 10 years from now?
Yeah.
You know, what are our long-term goals as a family unit? Where are we trying to get to? What are our priorities? And it's really hard to know. And this is for either partner, okay? It's hard to know if you're making the right decision to move in the right direction if you don't know where you're going long-term.
Yep.
You know, was it Alice in Wonderland, I think they said. It said, if you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there. And and I think that a lot of people, as they go through life, don't have a pretty clear objective of where they want to be 10 years from now. So during the holidays and the beginning of the new year is a great time to have that conversation. And if it's pretty clear that 10 years from now you want to have personal freedom and flexibility, you want to have control over your income streams, you want to have time for the kids, be able to go to any game you want, any time you want, to be involved in their lives, you want to be able to take vacations, if you want that freedom and flexibility, then the natural conversation is, okay, how do we get it, right? And you start comparing different, and it may come that the business ownership is the path that gets you there. And if you approach it from that angle, I think in some cases the spouse will probably understand at least the rationale for why you're pursuing it. And then after that, it's about knowledge acquisition. It's about getting comfortable. It's about dealing with fear. There's a lot that goes into that. The whole article discusses those issues. But you really got to start out with overall directional questions.
That's good stuff. I guess speaking to heading into next year, we do have some clarity on a pretty big topic, which would be our next president. And obviously our show today, aside from that, quick tangent on the front end, which I do think was important for a lot of folks heading toward the holidays, but sort of speaking to clarity and a game plan and a strategy for the future, we have a new president, we'll be sworn in early next year, and I guess my first question to you, and I know you touched on some of these topics in a couple of your recent published posts and entrepreneur articles, but to inform our listeners, do you feel like there will be some more clarity on some key topics impacting the franchise business model and small businesses, period, with Trump heading into office, heading into 2017? Do you feel like there'll be more clarity, or do you feel like there's more confusion, or a mix of both?
Well, I think there's definitely more clarity. I mean, whenever an election is going on, by definition, there's uncertainty. And when the election is over, there is always greater clarity. Now, is it perfect clarity as to, what's going to happen? The answer is probably not. There would have been more clarity if it was Clinton, because we would have known exactly what we're going to get, because it's the same thing she's done for the last 20 years, right? So, she's been very consistent in her approach, and there really wouldn't be any issues. I think in the case of Trump, there's still a wait-and-see type of an attitude to a certain extent. But, there's an absolute clarity. We know, who the president will be. We know what his background is. We know a little bit about his personality. We know that we've got... we're Republican-controlled Congress as well. So, there's a lot of clarity now that we didn't have before.
Sure. And with a pending Supreme Court placement, it seems that there is a possibility that the Republicans could have a majority in all three branches of government. Do you feel like that puts Trump in a position, at least for the next 2 years, where he can make some significant improvements or follow through on some of his promises or priorities? And do you feel like that's a critical time for him to get that stuff done quickly?
Well, yeah. I mean, for every president, the first 120 days, but realistically the first 2 years are the time where they can get the most accomplished. And that's especially true with the fact that they, control the two primary parts of government, the judicial branch. I don't even think that they are considered Republicans or not. I don't know if they even have affiliations from that. But nonetheless, they have a the first 2 years, we know for a fact that they're going to have control. So whatever it is that the Republican as a party want to accomplish, they will have the ability to accomplish. Obviously the real question will be how well Trump works with the Republican Party, because I'm not sure that he's not a traditional Republican candidate. Let's put it that way.
To put it lightly.
It will be interesting to see if they actually are able to work together and accomplish all the things that they'd like to accomplish, or whether there's a divergence at some point. I don't know that. I think that's we'll have to see.
We will see indeed. I guess I'm going to reverse track just a hair to speak to the Entrepreneur article you wrote a few weeks ago, more than a month ago, toward the end of the election, which I thought was perfectly pertinent for this race, where there was a lot of, bedwetting, alarm ringing, and, lying or hyperbolizing from, camps in both parties. And you're speaking to the fact that, whether you're an aspiring business owner looking at franchises, trying to determine your future, and you come in with a preconceived notion of what franchising is or what business ownership is, and you're rigid and not open to other opinions or another idea of how to approach that sort of process. Similarly, with the election, there were a lot of folks who had a preconceived idea of what they wanted their president to say or the path that they felt the country should take, as opposed to being open to all opinions and sort of internalizing and making a decision that way. I guess what I'm getting at, with this most recent presidential race, who do you feel is most at fault for the exaggerations, lies, and theatrics? Do you think it's, the candidates who were trying to paint a picture of their own reality? Do you think it was potential voters or voters who had their preconceived notions of why this candidate was good for them, whether that was true or not? Or maybe it was the media trying to spin a narrative that was specific to the bias their particular TV station or business entity had. So I guess, who do you think is most at fault, or is it just a combination of everybody, and sort of what were you going for with that post?
I'm always a believer that it's my fault. I think that unless you take responsibility, you never have the opportunity to grow. I think you need to start out by taking responsibility for things that happen and say, what could I have done differently? So, my natural inclination would be to say that the people at Vault would be the voters. And going to that article, really the article started out with an article. I read an article by PolitiFact, and PolitiFact was talking about the fact that we have just an exceptional number of falsehoods being stated on a regular basis and repeated, even though it's factually incorrect. And there's multiple studies. I mean, there's even recordings of the same person saying something opposite or previously, right? So even though it's factually incorrect, it doesn't seem to matter in the last election. And now, if the voters had said, listen, and by the way, this is not just Trump, this is Clinton. Both sides do the same thing, and every single politician that's ever been recorded has, going back as far as they have recordings, has done the same thing. We see the same thing on the Internet. We talked about that in the article, that you look at the Internet, there are more false articles out there on the Internet. They get more traction than the actual real articles, the ones that are factually correct. There are doctored photos out there that everybody knows are doctored. Everybody knows they're false. All you have to do is check, and you'll know that it's an absolutely false. Those are getting forwarded and shared much more than actual real photos. People are finding on the Internet what they like, what they believe in. They're grasping and trying to get everybody else to believe that same falsehood. And so there's a real blurring, I think, of reality versus people's desire to create the reality that they have already decided they want to have. And it's very interesting when you think about this, and we haven't talked about this, you and I, but, recently we had a guy get his submachine gun, right, drive up to a pizzeria. Wasn't it a pizzeria? It was in D.C. Where was that? Baltimore? Where was it? I forget where it was.
I think it was North Carolina, actually.
North Carolina? Okay. So he gets his submachine gun.
I think that's right. It was at a Comet Pizza in North Carolina.
Yeah, to save these children. Well, this was an absolutely false story. Everybody knew it was false, but this guy was convinced it was true, and he was going to go kill some people. And so, we have laws in this country about you can't yell fire in a theater, right? The freedom of speech, okay, but you can't yell fire in a theater because you can hurt people. Well, it's very interesting because a lot of people are really getting caught up in these falsehoods. And I guess the main point in this article was the idea that, we can live in our own world, and we all do. We can tell falsehoods to people to make them feel good, right? Because we don't want to tell them the truth. Hey, how do I look, darling? You look wonderful. You know, say, hey, your hair's sticking up or something. You know what I'm saying? So there's always, we're always doing this. It's part of our life, and we work really hard to protect our perception of what we want our life to be. And that's good. It's always been that way. I don't think that's ever going to change. However, the problem I have is when I'm working with somebody who wants to become a business owner, and they're like, I like this idea, and here are the reasons why. And they give me a bunch of reasons that are false. And I'm like, well, have you done any research on those? Yeah, but I've read those other articles. I don't think those are true. I like what I know, what I think is correct. And what happens is if you get into a business and you make a business decision, an investment decision, it doesn't even have to be a franchise. It can be another business. It could be a piece of real estate. It could be investing in a stock. But if you're making that investment based on false information, you're going to get unpredictable results. And the number one thing you want in an investment is to know what your risk profile is. You want to know what your chances of success are, what your downside risk is, and you have to live in an exceptionally fact-based world in order to make good investment decisions. And there is becoming more and more confusion between the reality of what things are happening versus people's tendency or desire to believe their own reality. And I think that was the main purpose of that article, that we really need to separate and segregate these things and always have a filter so that we know the difference between reality and not reality.
Yep. No, there's no question. That was well said. And, I mean, with regard to the most recent presidential race, I mean, you look no further than the most vocal folks on Facebook presenting their arguments for either candidate and the sources they're referencing to either build up the candidate they supported or tear down the candidate that they opposed. Almost every time, the sources were questionable at best, and the stories were, you know, as loud and provocative and crazy as possible to try to paint a certain narrative that in all honesty was either at best exaggerated and most times just completely false. So I definitely hear what you're saying for sure there. I guess from a business ownership perspective, sort of flipping the coin. So I would imagine that when it comes down to it, if I were to ask you the same question, you know, who's most at fault for a failed franchise ownership relationship, you know, that's caused by a lot of these false pretenses you're referencing, you would say it's more the fault of the aspiring franchise owner than a franchisor or franchise sales executive if it doesn't work because they haven't done their research or done their due diligence effectively. But a lot of people may blame a franchisor or a franchise coach or someone else for giving them bad information or for not, you know, sort of helping them realize their version of the truth. But if they go in with that type of perspective or that type of approach that they, you know, read an article or two, or they have an idea of the franchise they want to own, you know, they're committed, say, for example, that, you know, they think franchising is food. They want to own a Burger King or a McDonald's because that's what they see all the cars driving up to, but they haven't done their homework to get it right. At the end of the day, if you went in with these sort of preconceived versions of the truth as an aspiring franchise owner, it doesn't matter what anyone else does. The fault's going to be your own when it doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, and like I said, I mean, you can obviously argue that either direction, and I know there's people who feel both ways. It's just my personal position that you must always be responsible for the results of the decisions you make.
Yep.
And as soon as you blame other people, you are basically eliminating the ability to, or the requirement that you take responsibility, that you be accountable for your actions, and that you hold yourself accountable, and that you learn from those experiences, because an experience that doesn't go the way you want it to go gives you tremendous opportunity to grow if you take full responsibility for it and say, okay, what could I have done differently? Why did this not go the way I want? And again, it's not even franchising. It could be simply buying some kind of a stock, right, on the stock market. Mm-hmm. You buy the thing and it doesn't go the way you want, and you're like, okay, you know, what could I have done differently? Well, maybe you could put a stop loss in place. I don't know, but it makes you think, right? And say, okay, here's what I could have done differently to limit or manage my downside. Let's try that next time and see if I get a better result. It requires you evolve by taking responsibility. So it's always a philosophy that I have. I guess you could argue it either way, but that's just a personal philosophy.
certainly can. I completely agree with you. Whether it's a candidate you're voting for, a stock you're buying, or a business you're purchasing, if you haven't done your homework yourself and been open to the advice of people who know more about that topic than you, or you know, are very consistent and very devoted to finding the facts and the truth, and you know, more stable opinions and ideas on a certain topic, that's sort of on you at the end, that you did not do your due diligence, you didn't do your homework, and you either voted or chose something that you didn't have the real truth on, or you didn't take the time to have an unbiased opinion on. So I couldn't agree with you more there. So that's great stuff. I guess the next topic here, moving into, you know, sort of a different take on, you know, this election, where we're going from here. I mean, like, so speaking of alarm ringing, a lot of those who oppose Trump were suggesting that, you know, the economy, the global economy, the stock market would take a massive hit because of all the alarmist things he said about other world leaders, or his take on immigration, or where he's going to head with our business philosophies, saying that the stock market would crash when he took office, which is no surprise. There's a lot of alarmist ideas out there, but it seems a lot of those folks are eating crow.
For 2 hours.
Oh yeah, the stock market is rising. It's supposedly, from what I've read this morning, it's supposed to be on the rise for the next, you know, series of months. So, I mean, you created a Thanksgiving theme blog post talking about what you were thankful for in the wake of the election, that most in the business ownership realm should be thankful for, whichever side of the aisle they're on. Can you sort of speak to some of those things and some of the things you're optimistic about a Trump presidency?
Yeah, from an optimistic point of view, I do believe that Trump is going to be more business friendly. I think that is, you know, he comes from a business background. He understands, you know, some of the challenges that business people face. You know, he obviously works in a different level than, you know, the average small business owner would. But nonetheless, he is, you know, he's connected at that level of business ownership. A lot of the politicians that we've had historically have never owned a business and don't honestly know much about it. So I think that it's reasonable to expect that he is going to be work as a business-friendly president. I think that's probably one of the reasons. And also being on the Republican side with the Republican Congress, I think that you know, Republicans have historically, at the national level, you know, federal level, been business friendly and, you know, try to limit the amount of bureaucracy and reduce taxes and, you know, all the stuff that they've normally stood for. So,
yep.
You know, I think that one of the things that we see, the headiness we see right now in the stock market in regard to it going up and that sort of thing, goes down to the idea that probably this will be a president that will be good for business.
How about on the flip side? Do you see any warning signs? Are you afraid of some of his rhetoric or some of his decisions or sort of his decisions he's made as a leader? Do you feel like there are some warning signs or things that could negatively impact the franchising model or business owners from sort of his approach as a leader or some of the decisions he may make?
No, I really don't see a whole lot of downside just purely from a franchising business ownership point of view. The rhetoric doesn't necessarily bother me a lot. In our recent discussions with Carrier, we've been, you know, following along with what's going on with Carrier, and he doesn't even remember some of the rhetoric that he had. So,
sure.
You know, in regard to what he said he was going to do and exactly what he said and, you know, what he said versus what he intended and that kind of stuff. So, I think there's a lot of flexibility out there. There's a lot of change. There's a lot, you know, I think as a president, I'm not totally convinced that he really anticipated becoming president. And now that he's president, he's having to figure out, okay, how do I fulfill a lot of those promises? I think that there's some, you know, well, I think there's some underlying belief systems that out there. There's underlying beliefs that I think the guy has. I think in regard to, you know, protecting the United States about you know, from overseas, from job loss and from, you know, overseas competition and you know, trade deals, and I think all these are really core to who he is, and I think he's going to be a very strong advocate for the United States, and he's probably going to upset some folks, and he already has started, you know, in regard to, like, for example, his, you know, phone call with Taiwan, you know, that's what 40 years of political stuff that he has basically snubbed his nose at. And you know what? It may not be a bad idea. It's probably a pretty smart negotiating thing. I'm kind of the opinion that he knew exactly what he was doing and it might actually reset something that nobody had been brave enough to reset. So maybe that's a good deal. But I think he's going to be a strong advocate for the United States and for the United States as a business and as a trading organization, you might say. I think he'll be a strong advocate. I don't, a lot of the stuff from the social side, the social issues that are out there, I'm not as convinced that he cares as much about those issues. I think the Republican Party does, and I think that the Republican Party will probably drive some of those changes, and some of the more conservative attitudes that are out there will probably drive a lot of that. But if I look at Trump's historical positioning on a lot of those issues, he's been on all sides of them. And so I'm not sure that those are as core as his belief system that he needs to make America more competitive. And I think he's going to work really hard to make that happen.
I think you said it perfectly with what you said at the end there. I think his main mission is to make America more competitive and improve the way we go about doing business and making deals and establishing relationships within our borders and with powers across the world. So, yeah, I mean, I think that he will be pretty good at that, and I think he has the wherewithal as the CEO of a massive corporation, and with all his business interests over the years, I think he knows how to delegate and find smart people and, effectively hand out assignments to people who can handle them, and I think that's a good thing. So I think there's reason for optimism as well. As a franchise coach, I'm sure, you work with potential business owners who are, more left, more right, who are, agnostic or just don't really participate in politics very much, period. You speak with people all over the map. So how do you sort of handle this? I guess my first question would be back to the original discussion we had about coming in with preconceived notions. How do you handle somebody who is, I guess, what would you say to someone coming in now? How do you sort of help diffuse that issue when you speak with a franchise candidate? How do you get them to sort of back out of their preconceived ideas and prioritize the value of due diligence as they go through this process and taking in all information about business opportunities and the different franchises out there and how any politician or any president would impact the franchise model? How do you get people to sort of get out of their little narrow world and approach things more broadly?
Well, I'm going to divide that into two things. First of all, in regard to the president thing,
sure.
This is, what is this, the fourth election that I've gone through as a franchise coach? Third or fourth, I've been 16 years. Anyhow, yeah, probably third election that I've been through. It has been amazing how little this election has impacted anybody that I've worked with. There just really haven't been any discussions. People don't seem to, there hasn't been anybody who said, hey, I'm not going to get into a business because Trump is president, or vice versa. I'm going to get into a business because Trump is president, or I'm waiting for the election to end so that I can decide if I should get into business or not. Nobody, not a single person I'm working with or previously worked with, and which is really interesting because when Obama was up for election, there was a lot of people that were like, oh, my gosh, if Obama's elected, I'm going to have to move to another country. I mean, there was a lot of fretting, you might say, in regard to Obama. But in regard to the Clinton versus Trump, despite how nasty the election was, it really didn't affect people's opinion in regard to what they were going to do next. So, and that was kind of surprised me, but it is the reality that I saw there. In regard to kind of, the second question of how do we make sure people stay focused on the actual issues and the reality of it, I wrote a book about it. The Educated Franchisee is completely dedicated to say, how do we go out there and, step by step, logically tear a franchise company apart so that we know factually what the business is about, how it works, what it takes to be successful, how often, how well the system works in regard to predicting, creating success. I mean, it's what I wrote a book about. It's the first thing I talk to people about is how we're going to go through a fact-finding process to get the information we need to make a logical decision.
Yep, you wrote a book about it. You have a website dedicated to it, a ton of online resources that folks can benefit from, like your franchisee workbook, the Educated Franchisee workbook, like the glossary that you have available to inform everybody on the terms related to franchising that they may not know, like the FDD exchange that you have available for folks who can, use that tool to access and download recently updated FDDs from the franchise brands they're considering, and then everything that you share through your entrepreneur articles, through your LinkedIn published posts, through this podcast is all dedicated to helping people understand what due diligence is all about and helping them make a smart and informed decision on when they buy a franchise. So, yes,
yep.
you certainly are devoted to that. And, obviously there are no guarantees. There's a lot of questions remain to be answered in the next couple of years, but I think you and I agree, and I think most of the franchising community agrees that, you know, I think we'll get some clarity soon on some key issues impacting franchising, like the Affordable Care Act, like minimum wage, like immigration reform, things like that that do impact franchise business owners each and every day. And whether it's good, great, okay, bad news, at least there will be clarity. So if you are interested in buying a franchise, you know the game you're playing, and there's less uncertainty about what you'll be paying workers, what the minimum wage will be, and sort of how healthcare plans impact your business. At least we'll have a better understanding of what the game is.
Yeah, Benjamin Franklin said, the U.S. Constitution does not guarantee happiness, only the pursuit of it. You have to catch up with it yourself. I always like that saying, you know, only the pursuit of happiness, not a guarantee of happiness. And so the reality is that you have to, you know, go out there, you have to do your due diligence, and you have to be responsible for your own future, because nobody cares about your future as much as you do.
And if there's any way to wrap up a good show on that topic, I think that's the best way to do it. I think sort of the theme here is that no matter who's president at the end of the day, they are not responsible for your happiness, particularly if you're trying to launch a business. If you're you know, taking that big step in your life, whether it's with your spouse or with somebody else or on your own, you know, your happiness is up to the effort that you put into it. And at the end of the day, if it doesn't work out, it's your responsibility. So I'm with you, my man.
Absolutely.
And I appreciate your time today, and I think this was great stuff.
Hey, thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. And thanks, everyone, for joining today. Happy holidays to everybody here in early December. Hope everyone enjoyed their Thanksgiving and is looking forward to a great Christmas with their family. As always, keep track of the action here. We have these quarterly podcasts. Rick Vizio's Franchise Focus on Blog Talk Radio. Rick can be found on Twitter at EducatedZ. That's EducatedZEE. Send us your questions, comments there. And, of course, track his articles on Entrepreneur and his LinkedIn profile. Great stuff to go around. But without further ado, hope you guys have a wonderful rest of your day and a great weekend. Rick, thanks again for your time. I'll be talking to you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. Enjoy the rest of December. Enjoy Christmas. And we'll talk to you guys again in the new year. Have a good one. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.